Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is December 12th, 2025, and this is episode 122. Today is a sunny but chilly day here in Middle Tennessee. It is expected to get up to 50 degrees today, so it will be a great day for an afternoon hike. Just got in the mail my seeds for winter sowing from Roundstone Seeds. Going to try to start a bunch of Rattlesnake Master and some other perennials using the milk jug winter sowing technique. Wish me luck. I want to apologize in advance if you are hearing hammering in the background of this recording. They're building a new house next to us here on White Oak Drive, and not a thing in the world I can do about that. Sorry about that. In today's podcast, I want to introduce you to a new friend and to an organization which I've been meaning to profile for some time. The new friend is Alex Weiss, and the organization is the Tennessee State Parks Conservancy. As you will hear, Alex is not a newcomer to Tennessee nor to the field of conservation. He is the current executive director of the Tennessee State Parks Conservancy. You will hear about the Conservancy's ongoing efforts to make the Tennessee State Parks more accessible to underserved populations. And you will hear about a new campaign to assist in the redevelopment of the Davy Crockett Birthplace State Park up in East Tennessee. This park was destroyed in September of 2024 as a result of flooding of the Nolichucky River. I have posted a link to the State Park Conservancy's webpage in the podcast episode page. I sure do hope many of you will join this organization and make a contribution to their effort to restore Davy Crockett Birthplace. And I hope you will enjoy this interview with Alex Weiss. And we will get started right after this brief message. Be reminded that the Tennessee Conservationist magazine makes a great Christmas gift.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist magazine. Every year, we publish six beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
So, Alex Weiss, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you. Great to be here, Mark.
Well, Alex, it's nice to meet you. We have not met in person, and you are appearing today via Zoom, and I take it you're up in East Tennessee.
That's right. I live in paradise, fortunate to live in Blount County in the foothills to the Smoky Mountains.
That's great. That's a wonderful place to be. The first few years of living in Tennessee, I lived in that general area up in Gatlinburg.
And
spent several years there. And it is a beautiful place. And I will tell you that for those that visit the Smokies, that section of the park over next to Cades Cove and in Blount County there is quite beautiful. And it's not as crowded with tourists as the Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge is. I guess Townsend is the little town.
They call it the quiet side, and we've been here for almost 25 years, and it has remained quiet. I'm pleased to say.
Well, is that a result of an actual effort that the people in Townsend are making to keep it that way?
I think that's a lot of it. I'm sure it would look differently if it weren't for concerned citizens wanting to keep their way of life. Absolutely.
Well, excellent. There's a community near Gatlinburg called Pittman Center.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with that.
Which has a similar sort of attitude about growth and protection of the heritage there. So. And that's a good thing. Well, Alex, we're here today to talk about the Tennessee State Parks Conservancy. And actually, it's a long overdue interview about your organization. And so I wanted to get to, I saw something that intrigued me on social media here a week or two ago, and I thought I'm going to reach out to Alex and invite him to be a guest. Tell us what is the Tennessee State Parks Conservancy and what do they do?
Absolutely. So the Tennessee State Parks Conservancy, we are an independent organization. We're a 501c3, nonprofit organization, and we exist to help Tennessee State Parks be forever and for everyone. That's the simplest way that I can put it. We are, you could think of us as a friends group for all of the parks. There's certainly there are friends, individual friend groups for each individual park, and we sort of help serve all of the parks. We work in a number of different priority areas. We focus on helping Tennessee parks. They are already some of the most accessible parks in the nation. I mean, let's just start in with they're free. They're free for
Right,
all.
they're free, exactly.
Yeah, they're one of like seven. We're one of seven states that have free parks. So that's something that we should all be very proud of. But when you think of accessibility, we're talking about helping parks be available for everyone. And so, a lot of our focus has been on the disability community and helping parks try new things to help parks be even more accessible. So things like all-terrain wheelchairs, accessible kayak launches, colorblind viewers. Those are some of the areas where we have helped parks. And then another focus area is kids in parks. So that's one of our really important missions, is helping get Tennessee's youth and students in particular into parks. So one of the things that we do is we help overcome one of the greatest barriers to kids going to parks or on school field trips, and that is transportation costs. So we will cover all of the transportation costs for particularly for Title I schools, which there are a lot of Title I schools. About 50% of this of the public schools in Tennessee are Title I.
And I guess that's a percentage of the population in the school that is at the poverty level or just about the poverty level.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
Qualifying for subsidized lunches. That's right.
Right. And
So we send.
that's a
Sorry.
terrific outreach effort. Absolutely. Yep.
It's one of the most rewarding aspects of my job to see to when you see the photographs, when you hear the read the quotes from the teachers, from the students. That when they go to a park, it's just heartwarming. So much there's so much talk, and it's true these days about how kids are disconnected from the outdoors, and so every opportunity to help bridge that gap and get kids into our parks, into nature, get their feet splashing in a stream, listening to a bird. There's so many stories where we've their first time. Kids are going, the kids that we're sending to parks are experiencing things for the first time, their first trail, their first hike, the first time they've seen a particular type of bird. And what's really interesting about that, Mark, is that it doesn't matter. So often we think of that it's urban kids that don't have those opportunities as much. It's really, we
Right,
see that
right.
there's very little difference between the rural kids from rural schools or kids from urban schools. They are equally disconnected from our nature. And Tennessee State Parks, because every Tennessean lives within an hour or less from a state park. It's just an incredible opportunity and venue, and an entrance way for our students, for our Tennessee youth to experience nature.
I guess kids today spend a lot of time, at keyboards and interacting with the internet and different games and their friends and don't get outdoors as much as we did as kids.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Alex, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you got into the field of conservation?
Yeah, so I grew up on a farm, and I've always I guess I've had nature in me. It's I feel like it's part of my DNA. So it was I always kind of knew what I wanted to do with my life, or at least generally. And so I went to school and got a degree in biology, and eventually got a master's degree in wildlife science. And had various jobs across the country, but I've spent most of my career working as a conservation biologist for conservation NGOs. And so I worked for almost 25 years for the Nature Conservancy
Okay.
in Tennessee. And then 2 years ago, I started working for the Tennessee State Parks Conservancy, and I'm currently the
Okay.
executive director of the
Right.
conservancy.
Right. So just 2 years now.
Just 2 years, two
Okay.
years
All right.
and a couple of weeks. That's
All
right.
right. Well, welcome, welcome. The organization started in 2016, and as I understand it, was kind of incubated within the Department of Conservation for a year or two, and now it's freestanding, as it were.
That's right. It started in 2016, and then for the last 5 years, we have been an independent organization. That's right.
Right. Now, and can a citizen be a member of this organization, or a donor, or how does that, if you make a donation to the organization, is there a membership involved? Tell us about how that works.
Yeah, if you're a supporter of the Conservancy, we consider you a member, and you have
Okay.
access to our emails, our newsletter. We will be starting to have field trips, and our supporters will have first access to those field trips. So that's how we view supporters. And
Okay.
we've grown from a very small organization. Like you said, we were a part of the Tennessee Department of Environmental Conservation until we became an independent organization. We have a board. I should say one of the
Yes,
most
please.
important
Yes.
aspects to our success is we have a fantastic board of directors. We had 11, and then we have just this week we brought on two new board members. So we're at 13 right now, and they're just folks like yourself, Mark, who are they come from all different walks of life, but they all have one thing in common. They love parks and the value that parks bring to our society. So I'm just incredibly fortunate. That was one of the reasons why I was so excited and felt privileged to take this position, is we have such a strong board of trustees.
Fantastic. So I mentioned at the outset that I saw something on social media recently that was kind of the impetus that for me to reach out and initiate this conversation. And that was a project that you all are engaging in or starting up that has to do with the Davy Crockett Birthplace State Park. And for the listeners, this is a small park which is near Jonesboro, Tennessee, or Greenville, up in that area. Actually, I think the postal address is Limestone, Tennessee. But it in the fall of 2024 was hit by a rather major disaster. The park was flooded. It's on the Is it the not the Nolichucky River?
Yeah,
It
it's
is
a
the Nolichucky
Nolichucky.
River,
It's a
right?
Nolichucky. Yeah.
And the park flooded and kind of virtually washed it away. So that was September of 24. And so you all are involved in And part of the reconstruction of that park and trying to raise money and interest in that, the rebuilding of that nice little park. So tell us about your involvement there.
Yeah, so your history is right, Mark. It was actually September 27th of last year that Hurricane Helene came up and created this deluge in the southern Appalachians, and it actually impacted, caused severe damage to four of the state parks in East Tennessee. And in many ways they're still recovering from them. And the impacts will be long term. The park that was most impacted, and like you said, it was virtually washed away, was David Crockett Birthplace State Park, which is in limestone. It's on the banks of the Nolichucky River. And so thankfully, there was no loss of life in the park. They were the rangers did a tremendous job of evacuating everyone.
Yeah, there is a campground there right next to the river, actually.
Yeah, it's a very popular park. It bring there are people that camp there year after year, come from all over. And yeah, like I said, there was no loss of life. But the part that the river came up, and the river took control and washed away and left a couple feet of sediments. So shortly after that, the Tennessee State Park leadership, they started putting a plan together to restore the park. And they actually use the words the rebirth of the park. And so it's not just a matter of restoring what was there, it's rebuilding it in many ways in a way that it'll be better than it was before. And so there's a whole process in place to envision what the park will look like, and this is already a lot of that has taken place already
Right.
with
There have
the
been public
community,
meetings and all that kind of thing that you've
public
had before.
meetings which were the attendance was really exceptional, and a large number of people were there because this is a huge part of the community, like so many state parks. They're just such an important component of the local and regional community. So there's a process in place to rebuild the park, and the park came to the park leadership came to us and said, would the conservancy be a partner? Would they partner with the state parks and with the local, the Friends group, the Friends of David Crockett Birthplace State Park, and particularly help them with fundraising for the exhibit, the Davy Crockett exhibit that will go in the future museum and visitor center. So we were eager and honored to be a part of that. And I think I would describe our role as we're not really local. We're not local, at least like the Friends group is, and they're a really impressive Friends group for what they do and have done in the park. What we can do is we can help build on and support them by fundraising sort of regionally and statewide, and maybe even nationally. So that's been our that's kind of what we have been doing. So I can talk a little bit about the fund if you'd like.
I would love to hear more. Just please continue. You're doing great. I'm just lapping up all this information.
So we our fundraiser is it's our largest fundraiser to date. And I'm kind of giving you a
In terms of the
sneak peek.
goals, in terms of the goals that you've set for this
It is
particular project.
exactly in terms of our goals. It's we have $1 million goal, which is ambitious, to say the least, for our organization. And it's sort of like a capital fundraiser where we have a quiet phase and a public phase. And we're currently in the quiet phase where we are working with individual donors and corporations and hope to raise the bulk of the funding. So in many ways, Mark, you're getting a sneak peek at this, because we haven't really had a public, but we're not at the public phase yet. But I'm
You
still
know,
like,
what I
sorry.
remember, and I have been to this park on numerous occasions. I remember being in Tennessee State in the Department of Conservation in 1979. It's when I started there. And the park came into the ownership of the state park system, what, 74 or 75, somewhere around there, having been a KOA campground, as I recall.
That's exactly right.
And there was a lot of debate about the appropriateness of the state taking over that property at that time. And I mention that only to say that what an opportunity that Parks has now to develop that property in a more thoughtful way than it was initially developed. That campground right alongside the river is probably not what you would do today. I don't know what their plans are, but you do want to keep that sort of intensive use away from a water source if you possibly can. And I do remember when the visitor center was constructed there at the park around 1986, where they had a great big celebration of I guess it was the 200th birthday of Davy Crockett, as part of the Homecoming 86 celebrations that took place all around Tennessee at that time. And I remember the exhibits that were developed for that visitor center. At that time, the state had its own exhibits workshop development group that envisioned those exhibits, and they were quite nice about Davy Crockett and the history of that place. I guess there's some history there at that site also of archaeological interest, as a lot of those settlements along the riverside are, the Indians were there long before we were.
Long, long time ago before you. That's right.
But all of those exhibits and were lost in the flood.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yes, they were, and they were actually they had just updated the exhibits 2 months before the
Oh
flood.
my. I didn't
So
know that. I did not know that.
yeah. But you're right, because it was, all of the history, that in the park was originally a KOA campground. That's why the planning, the intentionality that's going into the planning now, will result in a park that I think will be a substantial improvement, than the previous park.
Absolutely fun. And you mentioned the local community there. These parks are extraordinarily important to the economies of these rural counties in Tennessee. And I as I've traveled around Tennessee and met with the chambers of commerce groups and that sort of thing, this provides an element of tourism that they really need and they rely on.
100%. It's sort of a cruel irony that some of our mo that our nature, to some of the wildest places in Tennessee, where places that have, some of the greatest biodiversity, not just in the state but in the country. Tennessee is the most biodiverse inland state. But the places that are the wildest are also the places with the where the economy is, has the states, has the communities or the counties that are most at risk economically.
Is true, is true.
So, and yet those counties over time have come to realize that their greatest opportunity, some of their greatest opportunities for economic development lie in tourism, outdoor recreation. And so state parks play an incredibly important role in those efforts, or in that regard. And then you have a place like Davy Crockett Birthplace State Park, where it's not just the nature, it's not just the recreation, but it's the history. And there's a
Right.
whole other element of tourism, that legacy tourism that is this and heritage tourism that is
Right.
focused on the history. And here we have Davy Crockett, an icon, a hero. And so there's the for all these reasons, the community, Northeast Tennessee, is just they can't wait for the park gates to open up again.
Well, Davy Crockett is such an important character in the history of Tennessee and of Texas, I guess, also. But he's so important in Tennessee that we actually have two state parks named in his honor.
That's
The
right.
other one
Just a,
being
yeah.
in Lawrenceburg, Tennessee.
That's right. Yeah, both located in places where that he lived, David Crockett lived. But it does confuse people sometimes that there's two parks. One is David Crockett State Park, which is in Lawrenceburg, and then the other is David Crockett Birthplace State Park, which is in Limestone in Greene in Washington County.
Have to note that Davy Crockett actually practiced law for a period of time in Nashville for a short period of time, and his office was where it was on Union Street in Nashville, and just a couple blocks from where I had a law office in Nashville
Oh,
for
no
many
kidding.
years.
Huh.
So that's beside the point. There has been a trend in parks and recreation for organizations like the state parks and local park departments of establishing friends groups and conservancy type groups. Have you been able to engage with your counterparts in other states and in other localities that are engaged in a similar way?
I have, and I do it on purpose so I can learn, especially from the ones that have been around a while and have lots of lessons to teach. But not every state, but many of the states have a conservancy or a foundation like ourselves.
I noticed, I remember traveling to New York years ago to, and I had never been to the New York City and wanted to visit Central Park, which of course, for anybody that's interested in parks it's like visiting Mecca or something. And when I was corresponding prior to going, the folks that had the most information was the state park, was the Central Park Conservancy
Oh
Organization,
yeah.
and they're the folks that were responsible for doing those major concerts that raised money to redevelop Central Park over the years. The Simon and
Yeah.
Garfunkel concerts and those sorts of things that people have seen on TV. The funds from which go to redevelop that park.
Yeah. I think in certain ways, why conservancies and foundations are so important is, parks the parks themselves are so focused on day-to-day business and running the park units and the role that but the role that we play is that we can there's this community of folks of park visitors that have been using parks in some cases for generations, and they want to give back. And they want to, whether it's volunteering or donating their time or their money. And it's hard for parks to connect with those folks. And that's the role, but that's the role that we can play,
Excellent.
is we can we're a venue by which park supporters can show their love for parks. And I think that's probably true of most of the conservancies and foundations and the friends groups across the country.
Well, I remember interviewing the lady that was involved with the Louisville Olmsted Parks Conservancy, and hearing the same comment from her. The Parks Department has their job to do, contacting foundations and people involved in the not-for-profit world is a talent and a skill that is not really in the quiver of many park and recreation directors. Tell us about that. I mean, who are you reaching out to? Do you find that the people you speak to about making major donations to your organization and to the state parks, are they interested, or is it something that, or is it a hard sell?
So, I mean, just to provide a little bit of context, we every year for the last 5 years, State Parks has run a fundraising campaign. It's called My Tennessee State Park, and it's in the spring. Throughout the month of April, and we have gotten more and more involved with helping and now we're actually hosting the fundraiser ourselves on behalf of the parks. But
So
there's
that money passes through your organization.
it does. So
Okay,
you what
okay.
the way it works is you show you basically vote for your park. Every dollar's a vote. You vote for
Right.
your park through donations. But as a part of that, when you donate, you have the opportunity to write a note with your donation. And so we get to read those notes, and it's really incredible, Mark, how it illustrates how deeply connected Tennesseans and our visitors from out of state are to our parks, and how special they are, and the special role that they have played in people's lives. And so when you're talking to answer your question, when you're talking to those folks, they get it, and they are looking. You don't have to sell anything to. You're not selling. You're providing a venue. You're providing a means for them to give back to parks. So I think it's been. It's not. I'm not going to say it's not e it's not it, I'm not going to say it's easy fundraising, because you still got to get out there, you still got to find those people and connect with them. But
Right.
once you have identified and met then and met and we've met each other, it's pretty amazing how people how generous they can be.
I try to imagine there are the individual citizens that can give the $50, $100, maybe a $1,000 gift, but then there are major donors who can give the $10,000 or the $100,000 gift. Tell us about that, and how do you qualify those people, or how do you find the folks that can do the major gift?
Well, that's a large part of why we have a board of trustees. They're a working board. They roll up their sleeve, and one of the ways that they can help us is identifying folks, friends of theirs and acquaintances that they know that have similar interests as our mission.
Right.
So that's a large part of it. Sometimes people also find us. We are getting a tremendous amount of support recently, just in terms of the numbers of folks that are first-time donors to us. So it's a bit of a mystery how did they hear about us? So we're always interested in learning that. In terms of the, I can talk a little bit about our, sort of back to the campaign.
Yes, please.
We started this fundraiser, and we actually call it the Go Ahead Fund, which is one of the better, comes from David Crockett's, you might call it his sort of personal, his motto, and it's quite well known. But it's it, his motto was, always be sure you're right, and then go ahead.
Go ahead, right.
Go ahead. So we call it the Go Ahead Fund, and our goal is $1 million, and right now we have raised about a quarter of $1 million.
Okay.
So we've had some
That's
tremendous,
terrific.
tremendous, generous donations, and our goal, and we're going to continue with our fundraising sort of in the quiet phase, and then it'll be more of a public phase in the spring, and
Okay.
it'll coincide with the 190th anniversary of the Battle of the Alamo. And
Oh,
there'll
okay.
be a crew of staff and volunteers from the park who will drive down to the Alamo, where there'll be a ceremony, a dawn ceremony, which is with that was the time of day when the Alamo fell. And we'll be bringing a wreath from Tennessee. And they're also bringing a chunk of rock that has tremendous significance. So when we were talking earlier about the park and the park being washed away, the park had a homestead with a cabin and sort of a corral, and there were animals there. They were able to rescue them before the flood. And the cabin was washed away, but it was a replica cabin. It was not the original cabin.
Right.
However, there was a large flat stone that was sort of the entrance way to step into the cabin, and that is considered to be an original
I
to
remember
the
that now
original
that you
cabin.
mention it. Yes.
And so there's a chunk of that, a small chunk of that broke off. And I say small, I believe it's smaller than a brick.
Okay.
And the staff from the park will be, when they go to the Alamo, they will be presenting that and leaving that as a remembrance, as for the Alamo to keep in their
Fantastic.
exhibit.
Fantastic. Will you all be involved directly in the development of the new exhibits, or will that be something that conservation and park staff will be doing, or how will that be done?
We will be involved. I mean, park staff will certainly have the they'll be directing the development of the exhibit. But I see a also see a team of folks, of historians and experts. We really see this, and we have been telling our donors that this is going to be a state-of-the-art museum. I think of it as a world-class museum. I mean, and I feel like we have responsibility to do no less for David Crockett. He oftentimes I've thought about, I've sort of asked the question, and I've learned a lot about Davy Crockett. I've always interested. I've been reading about him for years,
Right.
but became sort of reinterested with this campaign. And I've sort of wondered, what is it about Davy Crockett that that makes him relevant to this day? And why has he captured, why does he continue to capture imagination? I don't have the, I mean, I have some thoughts on that. But because he was, he was America's first celebrity. And he had this charisma and storytelling that we need to do him justice with this exhibit. And so the thought, the expertise that goes into it, and what that will cost is makes this a unique exhibit amongst your compared to your typical park.
Well, tell us more. You say a world-class exhibit. What does that mean to you exactly?
Yeah, so just in the level, when you think of a museum that you have been to and that really sticks in your mind, and I can think of and I can think of some that have really sort of affected me. We that's that that's what we want. We want the user to come away with that with their, they've learned and they've and they have been emotionally impacted by their visit. So it's a quality of the exhibit in terms of the storytelling and how the story is told. So I think we talked earlier that I'd send you some renderings, and I think
Yes.
you can make them available.
Yes, yes.
And so those are just some renderings of the type of exhibit that we're after. And for your Nashville readers, something of the, it's sort of the Tennessee Museum sets the bar, and that's what we're striving for is that
Excellent.
type of exhibit.
Excellent. That's terrific. So, Alex, tell us, in a nutshell, how do people find out more information about your organization and donating? Do you all have your own website, your own social media presence? Tell us about that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're on numerous social media platforms, Tennessee State Parks Conservancy. We have our website and TennesseeStateParksConservancy.org. I don't know if you could link to us afterwards, we'd appreciate that.
You bet.
And we have a web page where you can learn more about the Go Ahead Fund.
Okay.
And there's an opportunity there for people, if they choose to contribute to it, there's an
Okay.
opportunity for that. There's a link
Okay.
to donate.
Excellent. Well, we'll make sure that that we provide a link to that in the description of this episode of the podcast,
That'd be terrific. Thank
so
you.
that people can reach out and do that. Well, Alex, it's been a joy to meet you and to get to know what's going a little bit more about what's going on up there. I hope within the next year or so we'll have some I guess when is the outside when do you expect to sort of wrap this project up, or do you have a goal there?
Yeah, so the park will be coming out with a conceptual plan shortly. They'll be making that public, and we're probably a couple years away from having a structure and being able to put the exhibit in it. But
Right.
the timing is that timing is fine in terms of. Because we can be developing the exhibit, convening a team of folks, telling, designing the exhibit,
Right.
fabricating it, and so
That
it's
can be done
sitting,
as we
it's
go,
well,
right?
it's sitting just waiting to be moved in and
Right.
installed once the
Exactly.
building is built.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Alex, it's been great to get to know you a little bit, and I encourage my listeners to to follow up and find you on Facebook and Instagram and to find your homepage and to contribute to the extent that they can.
Thank you so much, Mark. This has been a great experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex.